We've got some joy and some tears. It's a mix today. That's all right. Let's just take a moment and pray as we prepare our hearts for the word. God, thank you that you speak to us. Lord, I thank you that your word, every time that we open it, every time that we come to it, it transforms us. So today, God, we come with open hearts. We want to hear from you. We want to receive from you. In Jesus' name, amen. So this morning, as Pastor Tyler said, we're continuing on in this sermon series through the Bible. We've been in the Old Testament, and this morning, oh, thanks. Do I sound froggy? I don't know. All right, ask Dad. We're coming to the story of Joshua. And the story of Joshua, there's a book in the Bible called Joshua, but the story of Joshua is, it has a very special place in my heart. And you might know that because my son is named Joshua. But it's more than that. And before we get into the Bible story today, I want to share with you a little bit of my testimony. Because so much of who I am today was formed through a time where the story of Joshua came alive to me. So when I was younger, actually when I was about 12 years old, I felt called into full-time ministry. I knew that was the path, that was the direction that God had for me in my life. I felt called to missions. And so I knew that my life, the journey that God had me on, would be speaking in front of people. It would be sharing the good news. It would be opening the word of God and proclaiming his goodness. And man, I was so excited about it. I knew that this was what God had called me to. I could see it in the future. I didn't really have any fear about it. I had grown up in the church. And so being on a stage, I was on the worship team, all those things, it was very natural for me. And so receiving a call into public formal ministry, I was like, all right, Jesus, I'm here for it. Let's do this. This is going to be exciting. And then I got into high school, and something changed within me. I was still excited. I was still eyes on the prize, like, what's the future? What's the goal? But suddenly, when I would get up in front of people in a classroom setting, and I would start to talk, if I had to give a presentation or share, all of a sudden, physically, I could not do it. My voice would start to shake. I would break out in hives, basically from head to toe. And I could not breathe. I couldn't take a deep breath. I literally, every time I stood in front of any room of people to speak, I felt like I was going to fall over and die. Like physically. I'm just like, there's something wrong. I couldn't form words. It was just a jumbled mess. It was shaky. And I remember going through this and questioning, why is this happening? I know what God has called me to. I know what he has promised me. I can see it. I'm not afraid of being in front of people, but physically now, there is something that is keeping me from stepping in to the calling that God has on my life. And that was terrifying. It wasn't being in front of people. It was the thought that I'm not going to be able to do the things that God has called me to do. And that scared me. And so this went on for a couple of years where just any time I stood in front of people to speak, I couldn't do it. But I continued pushing forward. I continued walking out the call that God had for me in the ways that I could. When I was 17, I went on a missions trip to the country of Botswana. And I was there for a month with a bunch of teenagers, and we were backpacking through the country, primarily in villages. And we were ministering, we were, you know, doing like one-on-one, going into houses, all the things that you typically do on a short-term missions trip. And one night, our group was gathered, and they said, you know, tomorrow, we're going to go into this very large school. And we want some of you to share your testimony. There's 500 students in this school. And so, of course, I'm like trying to go to the background. Please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. What do? They pick me. Lizzie, we want you to share your testimony at this school. And I said, I would love to, but I can't. I cannot get up in front of people and speak. My whole body shuts down. I said, I don't like it. I don't understand it. I don't know where it has come from because I've never struggled with this before. But I can't do the thing that God has said I would do. And so my team, they went off and they just began to pray just on their own, praying for discernment, asking God, what's happening here? How do we move forward with this? And after a time of prayer, they came back to me and multiple of this group said to me, Lizzie, we believe that God has placed within you a similar spirit to that of Joshua, which we're going to read about today. That you are to be strong and courageous. That you are to not be afraid. And that you are to step in to the thing that God has promised you. But it's going to require faith. And I stood there and I honestly laughed to myself. I'm like, you have got the wrong girl. Spirit of Joshua, like that's not me anymore. The struggle that I was having had really begun to take a toll on my confidence, on even knowing where I was supposed to go. What was I supposed to do? But then they prayed over me and they prayed that I would be filled with the boldness and the confidence that God was giving me. The same boldness and confidence that he gave to Joshua to do the impossible things that he called Joshua to. And that night as I went to my tent and I was just praying and I was preparing my testimony, what I was going to share the next day, I felt this. It was just one of those moments where I knew if I am going to step in to what God has called me to, it's going to be a huge step of faith tomorrow. I will actually have to physically step up on that stage and open my mouth and expect that God is going to do a miracle. And so the next morning I did. I got up. We went to this school. You walk into this school. There's 500. That is a lot of people. 500 kids in this room. And a couple of people on my team went first. And then it was my turn. And I remember just being like, Jesus, I know what you've called me to. I'm not afraid to stand in front of this group, but I don't know what's going to happen when I actually open my mouth. But I took that step of faith and I walked up on that stage and I held my testimony in my hands and I began to speak. And I spoke, I was told later, more powerfully and clearly than they had ever heard anyone speak before. It was a miracle. God had taken that step of faith that I made and he healed whatever had been going on within me for the few years prior. So when I come to the story of Joshua and I share his story, it comes for me from a very, very personal place. A place of knowing that when God calls us to something, when he tells us to step into the promise, when he says, have faith and be bold and be strong and be courageous, I know that when we do it, God delivers. That is our God. He is faithful. So this morning, as we dig into the word, I want you to be thinking about what is God calling you to? What is he asking you to step into? Where is he leading you that might require faith to step in? So the history of the Israelites, the people of God, up to this point, remember, they were slaves in Egypt. God had said to Abraham at one point early on in the story that you will enter into a promise. You will have many descendants. Your nation will be great. But then they end up in slavery, and then they're delivered from slavery. They cross miraculously the Red Sea, and things are looking good. They're out of slavery, out of bondage. They're headed toward the promise. They're in the wilderness, and as we heard last week, Moses, he sent some spies into the promised land. Check it out. Come back and tell us. And when the spies came back, even though they had seen the good things that were in the promised land, only two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, came back with a good report. The rest came back with fear. And because of that fearful report, because of the negative report, the people gravitated toward that and they said, hang on, we don't want that. We don't want to enter into the promise because we're afraid. In fact, it would maybe be better if we just went back to Egypt where we knew where we were going to get food. We knew that we were going to, you know, still be in slavery. But hey, at least we knew what was going to happen. The promised land, that's scary. That's unknown. We don't want to go. And so God said, then you're not going. Only two will enter the promised land. The two who gave the good report, Joshua and Caleb. But they had to wait 40 years until that generation that lived in unbelief and fear, until they passed away. So Joshua and Caleb, very old, they've got this new generation of Israelites that have come up, and they are now ready to enter into the promised land. But before they could enter, they come to this river, the Jordan River. The Jordan River basically separated the Israelites from the promise. And at this time of year, we read about this in the Bible, and we're going to get into it later. The river was flooded. It was swollen. There was no way that an entire nation of people could cross over this river. And so they had this actual physical thing that was limiting them, that was keeping them back from entering in to the promise. So the question is, how do we get in? How do we step into the thing that God has called us to, that he has promised us, when we've got this thing that's blocking the way? So Joshua chapters 1 through 4. Is the section that we're going to cover today. And there is just this recurring theme throughout these four chapters. And that is that it takes faith to step in. Faith to step in. And it starts with Joshua himself. Moses has now died, and he was a great leader. And he had done a lot for the people of Israel. God used him mightily. He has died now, and Joshua has been promoted to leader of this entire nation. And so for Joshua himself, this faith to step in starts with him and his call to lead the people of Israel. There are four separate times just in the first chapter where God says to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Actually, three of the times it came directly from God. One time it was the people of Israel who looked at Joshua and said, hey, dude, you're our leader. Be strong and courageous. And an additional three times, Joshua is told that God is with you. He will not leave you. He's going to be with you through this journey that you've been called to. Now, I believe that any person coming up after someone like Moses would need a little bit of encouragement. You have this great and mighty leader who did incredible things for God, who literally delivered the people out of slavery and out of bondage. He was the one that God used. And now you've got Joshua, his kind of right-hand guy, but he's not Moses. And so he comes and he's got this entire nation before him. And God is saying, I have positioned you and I have called you to lead. Step into that calling. Don't back down. Don't be afraid. Be bold. Be strong and courageous. See, this is no small task, taking an entire nation into something new, into a place that they've never been before. And Joshua knew it wasn't going to be the same. He wasn't the same leader that Moses was. These weren't the same situations that the Israelites had faced for the last 40 plus years. This was new. But Joshua also knew that God was the same. The same miracle-working God that had brought them thus far was still the God that they were serving, still the God that they were listening to, still the God that they were following. So God just reminds Joshua over and over again, I'm with you. Be strong. Be courageous. the mighty acts that we hear about in this story didn't originate from Joshua. They came from God. But God used Joshua. He placed him there so that he could lead the people into the miraculous and into the promise. So here's the scene that we come to in the book of Joshua. The nation of Israel is camped out on one side of the Jordan River. Joshua knew that the first city on the other side of the Jordan was this major fortified city called Jericho. It was a strong city. It was known for its strength. It was known for its power. And it was going to be the first place after the people entered into the promise. This would be the first place that they would come up against that would pose a threat. And so Joshua, in his wisdom, the wisdom that God had given him, sent two spies, not 10 like Moses did, just two. I wonder if it was because only two came back with a positive report before. He's like, maybe two is a better number. I don't know. But he sent two spies into Jericho. Go and check it out. Go and see what's happening there and come back and give a report. So this was in the waiting. This was before the Israelites as a nation could cross into the promise. And I believe that God led Joshua to do this in order to encourage him and in order to encourage the people. Because when the spies got into the city, they meet a woman named Rahab. And Rahab told them that the entire city, this city known for its strength and its power, was terrified of the Israelites because they had heard of God's power, that God was with them. They had heard that God had done mighty and miraculous things in this nation. And in Joshua chapter 2, verse 10, this is what it says. This is Rahab speaking. "For we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. For the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and the earth below." Now, what I find very interesting about this is Rahab is saying to the spies, "We are terrified of you because God has done great and miraculous things." But what is the great and miraculous thing that she calls out? That God parted the Red Sea so that you could walk through. That happened 40 years before. And yet, here this entire city is like, "Whoa, whoa, we remember. We remember hearing about that. We know that this was your God. And now, yeah, the Jordan River's here, but we know what God did before." They knew the greatness of God, these people who didn't even honor, worship, and serve him. But they had heard of the greatness of God. So Rahab ended up hiding these spies. She protected them. And while they were there, they entered into this promise with her that she and her family would be spared when the Israelites came in to take Jericho. See, Rahab now is stepping in to faith. Her language actually changes through the story, where at first she says, "We heard that the Lord, your God, did great things." Later on in her discussion with the spies, she actually calls God her God. She's making a statement of faith, and she's making steps of faith because she had heard of the greatness of God. Rahab took a risk because she believed what she had heard. And so the spies go back to Joshua. They give a good report to him. I'm sure he was thrilled to hear that, saying that God had indeed given them this land. So now we come to Joshua chapter 3. The promise is within sight. They've received a good report, but now there's this big obstacle in the way, the Jordan River, which at flood time was impossible to cross over with all the people, the animals, the belongings. They could not do it. But Joshua was ready to step into the promise. So he tells the people, he gathers them, and he says, "I want you to get ready and watch." That's it. Get ready and watch. What were they supposed to be watching for? We read about it in chapter 3, verse 3. It says, when you see the Levitical priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant of your Lord, your God, move out from your positions and follow them. So the Ark of the Covenant was the representation of the presence of God. So Joshua is telling the people to watch for God. Look, when you see the Ark of the Covenant moving, you need to watch it. You need to keep your eyes on it. When you see his presence moving through the camp down toward the water, start packing up and get ready to move. See, I think that we often forget to look how God is moving in our current situations. Before we see the miracle, before we're at the river, right now, in this waiting time, are we watching for God? Are we looking for how he's going to move? We love hindsight, right? We love being able to look back and say, hey, look at what God did, and that's good, and we're going to get to that. But what about what is God doing right now? How is he moving in this situation? How is he moving in my situation, in my life? See, I believe as followers of God, we need to be looking for him. We need to be eyes open, watchful, to see when he's moving, how he's moving in our situations. Do we have our eyes open? Are we attentive to see how he's moving in our midst? Are we asking for discernment to know what he's doing, where he's going, how he's leading us? So Joshua continues with his command to the people. And in verse 4, and if you have your physical Bibles with you today, I would encourage you to underline the first part of this verse, depending on the translation that you have. But in verse 4, Joshua says, since you have never traveled this way before, they will guide you. He's talking about the priests and the Ark of the Covenant. Since you've never gone this way before, they will guide you. Stay about a half mile behind them, keeping a clear distance between you and the Ark. Make sure you don't come any closer. In the ESV, this verse reads, yet there shall be a distance between you and it, the Ark of the Covenant, about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it, in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. Again, he's giving the people a command to keep their eyes on God. And by staying back that half mile, from that vantage point, looking down toward the river, they are able to, for the entire time, to keep the Ark of the Covenant in clear view. So the entire time, it's honestly like they have box seats and they're just watching the play-by-play. They're watching it unfold. They get to see the miracle as it's happening. I love the way that the ESV does translate it. That you will know the way to go, for you have not passed this way before. Now, the previous generation of Israelites had passed through the Red Sea. Joshua and Caleb had passed through the Red Sea, but even then, it was different than what it was going to be now. It was actually going to take greater faith, in my opinion, for the Israelites to cross the Jordan River than it took them to cross the Red Sea. Why? Because at the Red Sea, Israel was actively being pursued by the entire Egyptian army. They had no choice but to go forward, right? They couldn't turn back because the enemy was behind them. Crossing the Red Sea was to travel away from danger and to put a barrier between them and the enemy. Whereas in the Jordan River, Israel's now traveling toward potential danger. They know what's on the other side. They knew that Jericho was there. They knew that war was coming. Crossing the Jordan River meant that Israel was completely committed to the task of entering the promise and all that it meant. This was a demonstration of tremendous faith. Also, as we're going to continue to see, that the way that they crossed was different from the time before. It was the same God, but a different approach. At the Red Sea, what did God do? He told Moses, the leader, to raise his hands. And when Moses raised his hands over the sea, a strong wind blew all night until the water was parted and the people were able to walk through, essentially with two giant walls of water on either side of them. The people got to see the water parted. They got to see the miracle as it was happening, as the wind was blowing the sea apart. They saw it before they ever stepped foot into the seabed. You can read about it in Exodus 14. But here God was moving in a way they had not seen before. And this is an important lesson for us, knowing that it is the same God. We sang about it this morning. You've done it before. I know you'll do it again. But God sometimes uses a different method, and it's for a specific purpose. See, God knew here that the people needed to exhibit faith. They needed to step into the promise with faith. They needed to overcome the fear that had kept them for 40 years from entering into the promise. They needed to step into something before seeing the miracle. Keep your eyes on God, because you've never walked this way before. Chapter 3, verse 6. In the morning, Joshua said to the priests, "Lift up the Ark of the Covenant and lead the people across the river." And so they started out and went ahead of the people. Honestly, we're going to stop here for a moment because I have to commend the priests at this point. Joshua has literally given them no details. Just pick up the Ark of the Covenant and start walking. And that's what they did. They just set out. They are going to lead people across a river. They don't know how it's going to happen. And yet, they started walking. They started to walk in faith. And down in verse 8, God is now speaking further instructions to Joshua. He says, "Give this command to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. When you reach the banks of the Jordan River, take a few steps into the river and stop there." So see, it's already different. At the Red Sea, Moses raised his hands and the waters were parted before they ever walked in. Whereas here, God is saying to Joshua, who's telling the priests, go down and actually step into the water. Basically, get up to your ankles. Here, they haven't been told what's going to happen after they do that. They don't know what to expect. They don't even know that God is already beginning to work a miracle on their behalf. But they do listen, and they obey in faith. Walk with God into the swelling, roaring river. Just get your feet wet and watch what God will do. Has God ever led you to get your feet wet in faith when the roadmap wasn't clear? Yet he's asking you to follow him and to step out in faith. He has done this with me so many times. And every time I have seen him move in ways that only he could. I have seen miracles. I have seen things that honestly I didn't know that I needed at the time, things I didn't know to expect, but God led me into a faith exercise. And I think sometimes we need to think about it as it is exercise. It's an exercise of faith. What happens when you physically exercise? You get stronger. You grow. Faith exercise does the same thing. It makes you stronger. And it helps you to grow with God. So today, before we get to the miracle, we're dangling that miracle before you. I really want you to think right now again, what is God asking you to step into? Maybe for some, it's just a belief. It's just a belief that yes, God is real. Yes, God loves me. Yes, God is moving and he is active in my life. Yes, God still heals today. Maybe it's a belief. Maybe it's an actual step of moving in a direction or in a way that you haven't gone before. But you see God in the distance, just like the Israelites could see God's presence in the Ark of the Covenant. You see God in the distance, and he's calling you to follow him, to journey to a place that you've not been before. Before you know the why and the how and the where and the details and how it's all going to work out, I encourage you to step in and get your feet wet. Step in and watch as God unveils the miracle. Joshua 3, verse 9. So Joshua told the Israelites, "Come and listen to what the Lord your God says. Look, the Ark of the Covenant, which belongs to the Lord of the whole earth, will lead you across the Jordan River. The priests will carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth. As soon as their feet touch the water, the flow of water will be cut off upstream, and the river will stand up like a wall." Who will lead them? God. It's God. God will lead them across the impossible. God is the one who leads them through the problem. And then we get the details. As soon as the feet of the priests touch the water will stop. Down in verse 16, we're told that that is exactly what happened. As soon as the priest's feet got wet, the water stopped. The miracle was in process before it was even realized by the people walking in faith. God had already begun to do this miracle. They just had to step in, get their feet wet, and then see what God was going to do. If you need to know that God is working on your behalf now before you see the completion of the miracle, I just think you need to read this story again and again. God is working behind the scenes, and he's calling us to deepen our faith, to trust him as we step into his promises. There's one more part to this story that I want to get to this morning. Part of God's instructions to Joshua were to pre-select 12 men. And their job was, as they were passing through, walking down on dry ground through the river, they were to collect 12 large stones. So one stone for each man. And the purpose of that was that when they got into the promised land, they were going to take these stones and build, stack them up and build a memorial. And so that's what they did. As these men went through, they each picked up a stone, they brought it up out of the riverbed, and they piled them up on top of each other as a memorial. And after everyone was through, Joshua gathered the people together at that memorial. And this is what he said. It's in chapter 4, starting from verse 21. Joshua said to the Israelites, "In the future, your children will ask, 'What do these stones mean?' Then you can tell them, 'This is where the Israelites crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the river right before your eyes, and he kept it dry until you were all across, just as he did at the Red Sea when he dried it up until we had all crossed over. He did this so all the nations of the earth might know that the Lord's hand is powerful, and so you might fear the Lord your God forever.'" See, these stones of remembrance were to be noticed. They were to be seen. They were to be talked about to the next generation so that no one would ever forget what God did on behalf of his people at the Jordan. These stones were meant to be a testimony. Testify of what you saw God do. And there were two specific instructions about the memorial. What they were to tell their children. The first was that you would know that God is powerful. To know that he can do anything. That he has done miracles and he will do them again. There's always something so powerful that takes place when we look back at what God has done and we share it with others. That's why I love testifying, testimonies. Share your stories. Share about the goodness of God. Share about the little, maybe you see it as a little miracle. Maybe you don't even see it as a miracle, but your life today is a miracle, and it gives glory to God when you say, God has sustained me and he has brought me to this place because of his great faithfulness. We are meant to testify so that people know that God is powerful. When we do that, when we utilize the hindsight that is a gift that God has given us and we look back, we say, my God has done great and powerful things in my life, so I know that he will do it again for me, but I also know because he is faithful that he will do it for you as well. Look and see what God has done and then share it. So the first, to know that God was powerful. The second, you will fear God forever. Now that phrase, fear God, it kind of gets us a little uncomfortable because we understand fear as like the big scary, I'm afraid, right? It's fear is dread. It's considered a negative emotion. But fearing God from the Bible, when we read that, that we are to fear God, what it means is this deep reverence. We are to revere our God. We are to know who he is, and we are to worship him in reverence, in awe, in surrender. It's basically humbling ourselves and saying, my God is great. It's knowing that he is God, and I am going to live in surrender and worship. It's basically keeping God front and center in my life. So in essence, there's this twofold response to the miracle of stepping with faith into the promise of God. One is looking back and giving testimony. And two is looking forward and committing to keeping God first and only in my life. You know, my testimony at the beginning of not being able to speak for a time in front of people. When I apply this story to that testimony, I see some really cool things. For me to see the miracle, I had to step on that stage and I had to open my mouth. I had to essentially get my feet wet. And now I know with such confidence and such assurance that God has done a miracle in my life, and I am able to continue to live in the promise that he has called me to, not because I am anything great, but because he is. And that's good. I can look back and see God's faithfulness. I can see his power. I can see his miracle working nature. And I can testify that he's not done. He continues to work in miracle-working ways. Worship team, would you come? This morning, we're going to end this time in the Word with a song that talks about the miracle-working nature of our God, that he makes a way where there hasn't been a way. And what we have to do, church, is first of all, step in faith. Believe that this is our God. That if he's calling us to something, whatever that something is, if we step out in faith, he will do the miracle. He will part the waters. He will see us through. We just have to choose to believe. So I encourage you as we sing this song, would you sing with faith? Would you sing with belief? Yes, God, you are a Maywaker. Oh, what did I say?
Waymaker.
A Maywaker. You're also a Waymaker and a miracle worker. And you're a promise keeper. And you are my God. Let's sing that in faith. Would you stand?